Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, good Monday afternoon, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, Dalton Orwig, Corey LaBounty, Ian Blair with you on this post-Independence Day Sports Night edition. Corey joining us via the phone, so he could be really anywhere in the world if you think about it. Corey, happy Monday evening to you.
Yes, sir. Dalton, hope you had a wonderful 4th of July, as well as all our listeners out there as well.
And odds are, if you're listening to us in a vehicle right now, you are probably sitting on the Bayway or further east and heading west, because apparently that is a cluster right now, as it was Friday heading eastbound. And has someone ever, I don't know if this has been brought up before, but has someone thought of building maybe a new bridge, Corey, across the bay?
I think that's been brought up maybe a time or two, but it wouldn't hurt to try to think about getting that done.
No, and it's in like national news this week, in Associated Press this weekend. They wrote about how backed up traffic was going from this side of the bay all the way east and then down into Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. And in the AP story, they said Saturday is the busiest day. And I completely disagree. Maybe someone out there can debate me on that. Maybe you agree that Saturday is the worst day to try to cross the Bayway. But for me, it's always been Friday. Corey, Friday or Saturday, which one's worse?
I think I'm going to go with Friday, because that's the day everybody's
right.
Trying to get ahead of the traffic.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to go Friday.
Yeah, I don't know what the AP was trying to, trying to out-local us here or something. Friday is the worst day. And then, of course, Sundays, or in this case, Mondays after a big holiday weekend. But hope everyone had an awesome Independence Day. Not a lot of sports yesterday to watch, except for lots of baseball, which was great, lots of MLB. And tonight you get Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Tampa Bay could bring it on home. They're playing in Montreal. If they win tonight, they get the sweep against the Canadiens. They've been doing every other game for weeks now. Every other day they've played a game. And I assumed that yesterday would be Game 4, because the Game 3 was on Friday evening. And to me, Corey, nothing would have been more American than to have a team from Tampa Bay, Florida, go to Montreal, Canada, play the Canadiens' beloved pastime of a game, and finish a sweep and bring it back to America. I wish they'd have played tomorrow, but I guess July 5th is about as close as you can get if you're not going to play on Independence Day.
Yeah, you're exactly right about Independence Day. And I just wanted to see the Tampa Bay team drink out of the Stanley Cup.
Of course.
And I think that's one of the great American tradition, if you're able to pour as much beer or alcoholic beverage in that Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and they aren't allowed to have their family and friends up there to celebrate with them if they win tonight, because of the Canadian rules. And really, it was Montreal was fortunate, even though we all knew it was going to happen anyway, that the Canadian government allowed Montreal to travel to America to play in the semifinals, because until then they just kept the Canada teams in Canada and let all the American teams play through the regular season. But that's what you have tonight. Also, all kinds of MLB on today. And then tomorrow night, two big events. Game 1 of the NBA Finals, Milwaukee taking on Phoenix, and Game 1 will be in Phoenix. That starts at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. And you also have the match, Corey. I think a lot of people forgot about the match. They started doing this a few years back. I guess it was 2018 when you had Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods playing against each other on Thanksgiving Day. And then after that, they made it a foursome and added in Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. And then tomorrow night, we get Tom Brady and Phil against Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers. That's the match, and they're playing tomorrow. So another great thing to check out.
Yeah, I thought it's always been great television. I know 1 year ago when they were playing in the pouring down rain, there were some great sound bites, and Tom Brady actually showed why he's not only the GOAT on the football field, but not a bad golfer as well. And with everything that's going on with Aaron Rodgers and his quote-unquote holdout from football and him wanting to get away, stating today in an interview in Green Bay saying, hey, look, I needed a mental health break.
Right.
I think this will allow him to kind of get away from the football talk, even though it's going to be aimed in the direction. But it's very competitive and it's all access. And I love some of the insight that you get inside the competitiveness of it.
Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers mentioned that kind of insight you get as a reason to like Bryson DeChambeau, because, you know, DeChambeau's kind of built up this image, especially since the pandemic began when he gained all that weight, as kind of a, I think a lot of people look at him as some look at him as a nerd, some look at him as an insufferable jock, and then others just think he whines too much while he's out there. And then he split with his caddy this last weekend going into the second round of the tournament. So all kinds of emotional things going on there with DeChambeau. Rodgers thinks that by playing this match, more people will come to like him. But they're actually heavy favorites over Mickelson and Brady. Maybe that's because of Brady's ability on the golf course. But Bryson DeChambeau and Rodgers, minus 177 favorite over Brady and Mickelson, coming back at plus 130. So that'll be cool to check out tomorrow night. We'll talk more about the NBA Finals coming up. But right now, some big news earlier today regarding the South Alabama Jaguars and a local, highly recruited, highly ranked basketball player in Barry Dunning Jr. We talked about this a little bit last week, or maybe it was the week prior, when Dunning kind of readjusted his final teams and added the University of South Alabama to that final core of schools he was trying to choose, which one he would go to beginning next year. And then he set his selection date for Independence Day, for yesterday. And I brought up, you know, I don't know if this is a coincidence, but July 4th, USA's birthday, University of South Alabama, also known as USA. I was liking the chances, Corey, of the Jags getting this four-star, is he a five-star recruit?
He is four-star. I believe if he has a successful season, he is a top 75 player in the country, which, you know, speaks volumes of his game.
Yeah, no doubt. So you got this kid Dunning, who goes to McGill, 6'6". He's a forward. And South Alabama, late entry into his Final Four. He pushed off making an announcement yesterday, and then today says that he's ended up choosing the Arkansas Razorbacks over South, Ole Miss, and Memphis, which is an interesting choice, and there's a lot to talk about with this now, especially with the implementation of name, image, likeness rules, which just hit in Alabama last Thursday. So, Corey, what do you make of Barry Dunning's choice? I thought that South under Richie Riley was there where they might, you know, pick up a really big-time recruit, especially with the recruiting efforts that were made by the city. I mean, you had Mayor Stimson even jumping in on this, and Dunning ended up choosing Musselman and the SEC over Riley, the Jags, and the Sun Belt Conference.
Yeah, I really did think that South Alabama was going to be the 1-2 combo or come down to South Alabama and whomever else he chose, and ultimately it was the Arkansas Razorbacks. And with the success that Arkansas had this past season and the type of excitement that they generated in the NCAA tournament, they had been recruiting Barry for the longest in regards to, you know, watching them via YouTube during the pandemic, during the AAU tournament season last year, and just reaching out as a staff. And he said he felt most comfortable there. And he is the reigning Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Alabama, coming in averaging almost 22 points per game, and still has, understandably so, this is a verbal commitment. He has not signed anything, so he can still change his mind. And I know Coach Riley and his staff will continue to support him and continue to try to get him to sign his mind, change his mind. But with the name, image, and likeness, you know, with him going up to Arkansas, of course, it being a Power 5 conference in the SEC, the opportunity there for him, to me, probably would have been greater here in the city.
That's what I'm thinking.
For his name, image, and likeness to cast that. But, you know, he can go make his mark like a Lee Mayberry, like a Todd Day. He reminds me a lot of Todd Day from his framework. And I think this is a young man, another one from Mobile, Alabama, in a couple years. He won't have to worry about his name, image, and likeness because he'll be in the pros.
That's the thing, right? If you believe in yourself and you believe that you've got what it takes to get into the NBA, you know, the argument that one of the arguments that's been put out there that's anti-NIL is that players will just go where they get paid the most money. And really, it's going to look like the Wild West, and it kind of already is, because there just aren't that many – there isn't really a true framework of rules that the entire country is working off of. You've had each state legalize it or not legalize it. Not everyone has implemented these NIL rules, but then you have each school kind of coming up with their own rules and how to follow this. There's already been a lot of contracts signed, a lot of college kids already making some money, and we'll continue this conversation when we get back. Auburn and Alabama have had so many players sign on already. I'll let you know what's going on there, and also why Dunning, I think, made the wrong choice. More Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5 coming up. 343-0106, that's the number you can call or text. We'll be right back. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair, 343-0106. That's the number. And plenty to talk about. Corey, I always sell us short when football season ends. And even less so, you know, we're 4 years in now to this show. And it's a once-a-week show, 1 hour, and we never get everything that we want to talk about in during that hour. But once football ends, it's like, you know, what are we going to talk about? And we always find plenty to talk about. And, you know, we talked about the baseball tournament, the College World Series here over the last couple of weeks, and you end up with two SEC teams in the final, and you have one guy from Mobile who was on Prep Sports Report Saturday morning, Tanner Allen, on the Mississippi State Bulldogs, wins SEC Player of the Year, won some other big-time national award for being a Player of the Year, and you have Vanderbilt, the defending champs from 2019, because they didn't play a 2020 season. Two of the best, if not the two best pitchers in college baseball. And Mississippi State with just an incredible comeback after losing game one to Jack Leiter and the Commodores. They win game two and win game three. And Corey, you've got a mom, big-time Vanderbilt fan. I'm a Vols fan, but I was born in Nashville and have a lot of Commodores fans in my past, and they weren't able to get it done. The only sport they're good in, Corey, and they couldn't get it done.
Well, what's amazing is this is the first title for Mississippi State in 126 years. You would think they would have won a national championship in something.
In any team sport.
But in any sport, for the Mississippi State Bulldogs to win it, you know, I was a little bit torn because, of course, my mom being the Commodore fan she is, always like to see her black and gold succeed. But at the same time, when you have a Mobile, Alabama guy that is the college baseball player of the year and has the type of impact that he has and left the type of legacy that he's leaving at Mississippi State, I was not mad at Mississippi State for winning the whole thing.
No, I wasn't mad at him either, just well, except for losing a little bit of money by betting on Vanderbilt. But I don't understand. And honestly, you know, the money I did lose – total rookie mistake, total bettor's mistake. After the Commodores beat Mississippi State in game one, and they had Jack Leiter on the mound and crushed them, because I think they scored, what, 7 runs in the first inning and ended up winning pretty handily in that game one, I was thinking, all right, Vandy has figured it out again at the plate after going cold these last few games. They've got, for sure, Kumar Rocker coming up tonight in game two, and they've got Mississippi State on the ropes. I was thinking, no way Vandy loses this one. I threw the bet down. Then I find out Kumar Rocker was not starting game two. They had a freshman coming in who had played relatively well all season, but he wasn't an ace. He wasn't Leiter or Rocker, and saved Kumar Rocker for game three. Sometimes, and I know college coaches have done it a certain way for a long time. You got game three to worry about. Why not put your cleats on the Bulldog's throat while you have him there? I don't understand why you don't put your best pitcher. You've got Mississippi State on the ropes. You just whooped them the night prior. And you're going to put a freshman out there to get shelled and then hope that Kumar Rocker is able to reverse the momentum in game three and pitch the Commodores out of it. I don't understand. I think they think too much sometimes. Put your best guys out there.
It was a lot of pressure on Kumar Rocker. You can say what you want to in regards to it, but, I mean, in 4 1/3, he got 6 hits, 4 earned runs charged to him in what turned out to be probably his last college baseball game of his career. And really, it could have kind of immortalized him in regards to Vanderbilt history, but instead, I mean, Vanderbilt almost get no-no'd in the final and third and deciding game of the College World Series.
Yeah, and you know they, and part of that, I believe, there's no way to know for sure, but I think part of the reason Rocker got crushed in that game three is because you had a hot Mississippi State team at the plate. If he would have come in game two, they were nowhere near as confident swinging the bat as they were in game three. I am happy that Tanner Allen was able to win that and bring a trophy back home to Mobile. So that's very cool as well. And I'm just happy that the SEC is getting so much love for playing so well this year in college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the SEC's dominance really all season long. It was unbelievable. There was so much dominance. Every time you looked at the top 25, there was always probably five or six teams in the SEC in the top 10 in not only college baseball, but softball as well. So a tremendous year for the SEC as a whole, Dalton. When you look at it, I think eight different teams took home national championships as part of SEC dominance this year in as a whole in this sport during this pandemic year, which was very impressive.
And really, you know, the SEC has, of course, been top of the heap in football for years, thanks to Alabama. But even prior to Alabama's amazing streak here, their amazing dynasty they've got going on, SEC's been a football conference. And baseball has been, you know, not too shabby over the years, but especially these last few years, really good for the SEC. And now we're seeing it with basketball. We're seeing it with Nate Oates at Alabama, Bruce Pearl at Auburn, Musselman in Arkansas. Of course, Florida's always, for the most part, been able to put good teams out there for a long time. And that, you know, it continues even now as we talk about Barry Dunning Jr. choosing the Arkansas Razorbacks over South, Ole Miss, and Memphis. And with the NIL tying all of this together, I was thinking during those college finals, those baseball games, you know, today or tomorrow, I can't remember, the game was last Wednesday, and I think last Wednesday was the final game, that any of those guys, if they weren't planning to go pro, could the next day sign a contract with some local business and start making some money off their name, something that Reggie Bush had his Heisman taken away from him for. And that's become a big topic too. But now when you look at recruiting, players have even more decisions to make. And I know they've been paid under the table in some form or fashion and in a lot of different ways over a lot of years. But now that it's out there in the open, and right now while the Congress has not made up any kind of, you know, way any set of rules that everyone has to abide by, and the NCAA has really stepped out, they're almost like ignoring everyone because they feel like they were slighted by this new rule. So each school now is making up their own rules, and I don't see how you avoid having, you know, find a way to get money to the players that you're trying to recruit. But more than that, players have to now make the decision. Do I want to be the sixth best player to go and sign with Arkansas, or do I want to be by a margin the best player to sign at South Alabama or sign at Troy? Which one is going to make me more money? And would I rather have that more money and be the face of a town, the big fish in a small pond, or would I rather have the better opportunity to go out and win an SEC championship or win a national championship, get seen by more people and scouts on the national news? It's tough decisions, and Barry Dunning Jr. had to make that tough decision today.
He did, and I mean, under the counsel with great, great family, because his mom and dad are so influential in the decision that he made, but allowing him to make it on his own, because ultimately Barry is the one who's going to have to be in Arkansas for 1 or 2 years. But I think the glass is half full and half empty. And what do I mean by that? I'm looking at a situation to where sometimes when you grow up in a city, you get tired of being in that same environment. You want to experience something new. And I think that by going to Arkansas, he's able to do that. I think he's able to compete at the highest level. I think Arkansas basketball will tell, you know, just by looking at the television and the history of the Barn there in Arkansas, that they take basketball second to none. Yeah. Nolan Richardson laid that foundation, and I think he'll be successful. And this is what I like about it as well. When you have people like Tanner Allen making a decision to go off to Mississippi State and not stay here in South Alabama, when you have people like Barry Dunning Jr. or DeMarcus Cousins going to Kentucky and making his name in Kentucky, another local, Eric Bledsoe from the Birmingham area, He goes to Kentucky. So when you have an opportunity to get away from home, to branch out a little bit and make that name for yourself away from the city, yeah, you always love to do it underneath your own branch and your own umbrella of what you're comfortable and used to being around. But at the same time, I totally understand and respect his decision. And I think that his name, image, and likeness in Arkansas, when it's all said and done, not only will he have an opportunity to get paid as a Razorback, he'll get paid in the NBA also.
Great point. And that point you made about wanting to get away from home, that's something I did not think about, but is 100% valid. You grow up in a place – I mean, I went to all the way across the Atlantic and went to Troy University to get away from home, and I did end up back here at South. But you're right. That's the decision that a lot of seniors in high school make. They want to get away a little bit. There's been a lot of NIL deals signed. We'll talk about what some of the Auburn and Alabama guys have signed on for already. And you mentioned DeMarcus Cousins. He misses out on another chance for a championship. Where might he go? And we'll talk about the NBA Finals when we get back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
So good, baby, baby.
Shake it, shake it.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking the bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I
welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair on this July 5th, 2021. Hope that you left the beach or wherever you're coming from on the east side early enough that you're not stuck in all this traffic, but there you go. That's just part of living where we live. And tonight, two major points of conversation to this point, and we'll get into the NBA Finals here in a minute, but Barry Dunning Jr., a local four-star recruit out of McGill-Tulane, choosing the Arkansas Razorbacks over South Alabama, and the beginning of the NIL era in college, well, football, basketball, baseball, name your sport. And how will that affect recruiting? How will that affect really the entirety of the NCAA? And will the NCAA stick around through all this? I know there's a lot of people saying that this could be the death blow to the NCAA, but I'm kind of surprised at how many players have already signed deals with companies, Corey. And you look at our two state schools here in Alabama and Auburn, and a lot of them have signed with some of the same companies. My computer's acting up here, but I know one of them's called Yoke Gaming, Y-O-K-E, and the way I understand it, and Ian, you might have a little more insight into this, I'm not sure, it's like Twitch, which has been huge over the last few years, where in Twitch, you get to, I think it began with video games, now people almost host like, you know, call-in shows, like it's public television, public access, but it started with video games, and you hook your screen up to the live broadcast and people watch you while you play and while you talk. And it's gotten some athletes in some trouble and have been suspended from their sports for saying things they shouldn't be saying. But it's also gained huge followings for these athletes. And until now, these college kids, when they get on there and play on Twitch, they haven't been able to make money. So now there's this new company that's come along. I don't know how new it is, but it's called Yoke Gaming. And the way I understand it is it's very similar to Twitch, except people will pay like almost subscriptions or pay-per-view to watch their favorite athletes or their favorite celebrities play. And I've seen a number of people on both Alabama and Auburn sign with them. You have Trayshawn Holden with Bama, DeMarco Helms, Christopher Allen, Evan Neal, Hall, the wide receiver. No, he signed with College Football Edits, which is some other thing on Instagram. See, these players are doing like their generation and finding ways to make money through the internet that even to someone like me who's 29 going on 30 is almost like above my head, some of these things that are going on here. Javion Cohen with Bama signed with Yoke Gaming. You look at Auburn and it seems like half the team is signed with this group. And then you also have some other companies like Milo Sweet Tea. Bo Nix at 12:01 a.m. when NIL became legal in Alabama put up an Instagram post where he was holding the Milo Sweet Tea. And then you have Malachi Moore with Alabama who's also signed on with Milo's Tea. It's good to see a lot of these guys getting paid for using their name, image, likeness. What are your thoughts 1 week in here, Corey?
Yeah, I think that they should get paid for their name, image, and likeness. We mentioned off the air talking about the amount of money that can be made. Now, growing up, I know having an opportunity to play against whoever it is online, especially a college athlete, that, you know, you should be able to get paid for that. And I think that if you want to have that right and privilege to do that, the student athlete should have that opportunity to make that money. But it will encourage the student athlete to stay in school, because every league is different. The NFL, you're required to be in school for 3 years before you declare for the draft. So you're going to get paid for 3 years regardless. The NBA is kind of a one and done, maybe directly from high school type of deal. So every organization is different. But, you know, we talked about Hersey Miller, which is Master P's son, signing a $2 million endorsement deal, a deal with a web app company. And that type of money, not that Master P's son needed it, or Deion Sanders' sons, who probably will sign a big-time deal. It's an opportunity to keep these young people in college 3 to 4 years, especially those that are not at your Power 5 school.
Yeah, and of course, Master P, a businessman in the truest sense. I think, is he a billionaire? I can't remember. He's made a lot of money over the years.
He is a billionaire. I mean, he's one of those guys that found it out in the rap game, turned it into the business game.
And
taught
his children how to do the exact same thing, make some money. And it's been great to see that. I think really of all the players on Alabama and Auburn that I've seen, Bryce Young, I think, has capitalized with the biggest name. And right now I think of all the players, well, trying to think through the rosters right now, I think he has the most potential to get paid, really paid, over this next year of anybody on Alabama or Auburn. And he, well, he signed on with Creative Artists Agency, so I haven't seen very many other players in this market sign with an agency. And then the first deal that Bryce Young announced was with the Cash App, which is a huge promoter on podcasts and all other kinds of media. And Bryce Young signs with them. I imagine he's getting paid handsomely for that. What this is going to end up doing, though, in the meantime, there are going to be some winners as far as schools and teams are concerned. There are going to be some major winners, and there are going to be some big-time losers, because there really is no set standard set of rules right now. And I honestly, politically, I think that's kind of the way to get this thing started and initially let the market figure out what it's going to do and how this is going to work. Hopefully this pulls out all of the under the table money that's been going to athletes over the years, and they actually start paying them in some form of, like, you know, a legal way where we all know kind of what's happening. But the regulation will come at some point. There will be one set of rules for, if not just each conference, for the entirety of the nation. But that'll come after these teams kind of figure out the pecking order and figure out how this is done. And I have no doubt in my mind that whoever figures this out first will be national champions in a number of different sports. And it's hard now not to just assume that Bama and Clemson and Ohio State and Oklahoma are going to be those teams that figure it out.
Yeah, I think that, again, the winners in this are the student athletes, and pay them. I mean, this is across the board. It's not just men's sports. It's going to be the women's sports as well, because they garner and have a lot of followers. But what it does, you talked about it moments ago, Dalton. It's essentially the death penalty for the NCAA, because amateurism was created for the NCAA. And what it does now, this allows the student athletes to get paid in all sports. It allows you to get paid an unlimited amount of money. It doesn't discriminate. Whatever sport you play in, whatever your gender is, basically these companies, the more followers you have, the better off you are and the more you can promote their message. And if it's a certain cause that you want to support, you're able to do that also.
Yeah. And, you know, there's schools right now that are drawing up their own rules. And I think that's the next media firestorm, if I can go ahead and make a prediction, is the media will find some school that has a problem with one promotional item or another. Like, will BYU athletes be able to advertise for Folgers, you know? Mormons, they don't drink caffeine. Will they be able to advertise for Bud Light? Say you got a 21-year-old, 22-year-old quarterback. I think BYU will make certain things, you know, they won't allow their athletes to promote certain things. Same thing for Notre Dame. You're not going to see an athlete, you know, with Planned Parenthood that plays for Notre Dame. I think you're going to see the media, which they love to start storms, we know that, they're going to get after some of these schools for what those schools – fan base and for what their donors, most importantly, believe in and what they don't believe in. And that's going to cause some issues in this sometimes very progressive media, which might have a problem with what Alabama feels safe advertising or not advertising, because their biggest donors might be, you know, not comfortable with it ethically. I think that's going to be a huge thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're caught in the crosshairs in regards to there being a fine line, and when do you step outside of it? When do you put an end to it? So it's going to be fun to watch. Like you said, certain colleges and institutions will allow you to use their logo. Alabama is one that's not going to allow you to use their logo, but LSU is. Within your endorsement of their product. So, you know, do you use that on the recruiting trail as well as extra way, hey, this school's not going to let you endorse X, Y, and Z with Alabama Script A, but LSU will? There's going to be certain aspects that's going to garner not only local and national attention, but student-athlete attention into where they go ahead and commit to also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who will be the first Stanford or UCLA athlete to be advertising for some weed shop, you know? I wonder how long that'll come, and then what'll happen with the NCAA and Pac-12 then. All right, when we get back, we're in game four tonight of the Stanley Cup Finals. It could end tonight with Tampa Bay playing in Montreal. They're up 3-0. And the NBA Finals get started tomorrow night, an 8 p.m. tip-off, Phoenix, Milwaukee. This is not what the association wanted to see at the end of the year. Two markets that are, while well-represented, rabid fan bases, we're not looking at a Brooklyn-LA Clippers final here, so maybe not the number of eyes that the NBA is wanting to see, but a good matchup. And we'll talk about the odds when we get back. Will Giannis make it back out there onto the court for Game 1? And what do we think about the Clippers and Hawks now that their seasons have come to an end? That and more coming up. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Text line and phone line open, 343-0106.
It's a life or death situation, man. Yeah.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you. And looking at the odds for the NBA Finals, which get started tomorrow night. Game one in Phoenix. Not sure whether two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo will be playing with that, a hyperextended knee they decided he had. Not sure if he'll play yet. But right now, Phoenix a 5.5-point favorite in game one. Total set at 218.5. You look at the series, and Phoenix, a pretty heavy favorite. I'm having trouble understanding this. Phoenix minus 200, which basically the odds makers are giving them a 66% chance of winning this series. And Milwaukee coming back the other way at plus 165, so right around a 40% chance they're giving them. Corey, I'm not seeing it with these futures. I know that Phoenix, you know, they beat L.A., the Lakers, in first series. They walked right through. Who was it in series in round two that they walked right through? Denver.
That was a Denver sweep.
Yeah,
and it was not pretty to watch.
Not pretty at all. And then you had a bit of a good matchup against the Clippers,
right?
But they end up winning, you know, both series against the two favorites to win it all coming into the year, and it was a bit of a battle there at the end against the Clippers, even without Kawhi Leonard on the floor. Milwaukee was considered, I think, you know, a tier below the two LA teams, but still one of the favorites to win it all this year, especially with a healthy Giannis Antetokounmpo. And from what we've seen from the his flanks, from his side men there in Milwaukee, especially Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez earlier in the series, I'm having trouble seeing Phoenix being a 66% favorite to win this whole thing.
Well, what's interesting is you're looking at one of these franchises are going to hold up that NBA trophy for the first time in a very, very, very long time. If the Suns win it all, it'll be their first ever in their franchise, and the Bucks have not won a world championship since 1971. So you mentioned going into the break about the markets of both these teams. Phoenix has a great following. It's hard to believe that it's been since 93 since they have been in the NBA Finals. But Milwaukee finishes overall third in the East, and the Suns come in second in the West. So I think that when you start talking about these two teams, I personally think that Phoenix is going to win it all in probably six games.
Six, you're giving them. Six. All right, my theory, my guess on this series, and I'm already I went ahead and put my money on the Bucks at plus 5.5 tomorrow night, because I do think that Giannis will come back and play, and that line will drop, and Phoenix will still be favored, but not by as much. I just, the length of Milwaukee, the young player in Devin Booker, and he's gone off this playoffs. There's no doubt about that. And he went off last year in the bubble too, but with that broken nose and how he's played these last three games, and that's with you had who was LA? You had Beverly, right? Beverly that was Booker. I just think Milwaukee's going to frustrate him. I think that DeAndre Ayton is also going to fold. And even if you have Chris Paul playing the games of his life, I just, Milwaukee seems to have such a better supporting cast than Phoenix. And if you get Giannis back in there and he starts playing the way he's supposed to play, I've got Milwaukee in six, maybe even in, well, I'll say Milwaukee in six or seven. So I guess that would leave us with Ian to settle this tiebreaker. And I know Ian has an opinion on this.
Well, yeah, for sure. First off, for any Suns or Bucks fans out there, I apologize for this because I'm not going to give you a straight answer just out of the gate. This all hinges on Giannis's health. This entire series, this entire finals, all hinges on Giannis's health. Giannis exercised those playoff demons against Miami in the first round, absolutely torched Bam Adebayo. He's figured out how people are guarding him. He's finally hitting his jumpers. Finally hitting that mid-range jumper. It's not great, but when you're hitting 5 out of 11, that's good enough. So, if Giannis comes back in games 1 or 2, I think Milwaukee takes one on the road. If Milwaukee can split those first two games in Phoenix, I'm saying it's Bucks in 5. But if they can't, and somehow, some way, Chris Paul goes off, you put the axe in the hands of the executioner, and he just starts going off, bombs start dropping, he hits 16 points in a row, whatever, I would say that Phoenix may end up sweeping this series if Giannis does not make an appearance until games 3 or 4. So,
wow.
I think this series is over quick. I think it's over easy, one way or the other. Just depends on who's got it at the end of the day. Giannis, this one's on you, my friend.
Well, it should be interesting. It should be a hopefully a great series, because you look at this entire NBA playoffs and, you know, it just hasn't been great from a purely, you know, from someone who really wasn't wanting one team or the other to win at all. The only good series I've really seen has been Brooklyn and who did Brooklyn go 7 with? Milwaukee.
That
was the only great series I've seen this entire playoff. And even L.A. Phoenix early on ended in 6. I heard Anthony Davis, which is just becoming a common theme in his career. Corey, I haven't been impressed in the slightest, and maybe it is because of the late season last year.
I think that what I've been impressed with in the postseason play is the new names that are coming out, the Devin Bookers of the world, the Trae Youngs of the world, the DeAndre Aytons of the world. These are a lot of players that we have not heard about throughout the entire NBA season in regards to one of them was not even an NBA All-Star, which is hard to believe. But when you start talking about the growth of basketball and basketball being in good hands, it's definitely shown its head in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So that'll start tomorrow night. NHL Stanley Cup Finals could be over by tonight. And then this weekend, I'm very excited. You got Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier fighting the trilogy, their third fight coming up this Saturday night, and a heck of a card after that as well. Gilbert Burns, Stephen Thompson, and former NFL player Greg Hardy and Tai Tuivasa. You know, the game is just so much more fun, the fighting game, when Conor McGregor is at or near the top of it. And I know a lot of people are tired of him. They don't like him in the slightest because of his, his ability to brag and show off that money. But Poirier, almost a local guy from Lafayette, Louisiana, and I think surprised a lot of people coming out and knocking out McGregor like he did in January. So McGregor, he's got the money, but I think there's still some incentive in there for him to come back and find his way back to the top of the game. This is purely the fan in me, but I'm going with McGregor, and I think he gets it done early this weekend. I think Poirier has the better odds, and if I were really putting money on this, which I'm not this weekend, I'd put that money on Poirier, but I'm rooting for McGregor. I don't know. How about you, Corey?
I just want to see the swag of McGregor one way or the other. Either he's going to knock somebody out or get knocked out. Either way it goes, he's going to do it with a lot of swagger.
The billion-dollar strut there, right? That he had across
exactly.
So that'll
get a
be
a little Irish whiskey in him afterwards.
Yeah, Ian, you going to pick this fight? What are you thinking?
It again. I'm going to. You know, I'm going to actually give you a straight answer on this. I was going to put some stipulations on it, but I'm done kind of beating around the bush here for tonight. If Connor is as conditioned as he should be for this fight, as he realistically should be, because you, rule number one of warfare, never underestimate your opponent. Rule number two, always be prepared, always keep your guard up. If Connor is actually conditioned for this, I have Connor by knockout by the third round.
There we go. I guess I'm paying the $75 to watch it this weekend, so it should be a good one. Corey, you can just come by the house, all right?
There you go. You got it.
All right, another hour come and gone too fast. That's Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. I'll be back tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan, 6 a.m., bright and early, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer.